With our new series called Search for Happiness, we will ask ourselves, what makes us happy? Along with other resources, two books of the Bible must be helpful. They are the book of Ecclesiastes and the book of Paul's letters to the Christians at Philippi. First, the writer of Ecclesiastes, in spite of the great affluence, status, and power he had, wasn't happy. In the beginning parts of his book, we read what have found not as helpful as we would think in our search for happiness. Hear his words, paraphrased in a modern language. Ecclesiastes chapter 2, verses 1 through 11. I said to myself, let's go for it. Experiment with pleasure. Have a good time. But there was nothing to it, nothing but smoke. What do I think of the fun-filled life? Insane, inane. My verdict on the pursuit of happiness? Who needs it? With the help of a bottle of wine and all the wisdom I could muster, I tried my level best to penetrate the absurdity of life. I wanted to get a handle on anything useful we mortals might do during the years we spend on this earth. Oh, I did great things. Built houses, planted vineyards, designed gardens and parks, and planted a variety of fruit trees in them. Made pools of water to irrigate groves of trees. I bought slaves, male and female, who had children, giving me even more slaves. Then I acquired large herds and flocks, larger than any before me in Jerusalem. I piled up silver and gold, loot from kings and kingdoms. I gathered a chorus of singers to entertain me with song. And most exquisite of all pleasures, voluptuous maidens for my bed. Oh, how I prospered. I left all my predecessors in Jerusalem far behind, left them behind in the dust. What's more, I kept a clear head through it all. Everything I wanted, I took. I never said no to myself. I gave in to every impulse, held back nothing. I sucked the marrow from pleasure out of every task, my reward to myself for a hard day's work. Then I took a good look at everything I'd done, looked at all the sweat and hard work. But when I looked, I saw nothing but smoke and spitting into the wind. There was nothing to any of it, nothing. On the contrary, in Philippians, we read how Paul tells us how to live a happy and contented life. Hear of what he has found as secrets of happiness. Philippians 4, chapter 4, verses 8 through 13. In the Bible, paraphrase version, The Message. Summing it all up, friends, I'd say you'll do best by filling your minds and meditating on things true, noble, reputable, authentic, compelling, gracious, the best, not the worst, the beautiful, not the ugly, things to praise, not things to curse. Put into practice what you learned from me, what you heard and saw and realized. Do that, and God, who makes everything work together, will work you into his most excellent harmonies. I'm glad in God, far happier than you would ever guess. Happy that you're again showing such strong concern for me. Not that you ever quit praying and thinking about me. You just had no chance to show it. Actually, I don't have a sense of needing anything personally. I've learned by how to be quite content, whatever my circumstances. I'm just as happy with little as with much as with little. I've found the recipe for being happy, whether full or hungry, hands full or hands empty. Whatever I have, wherever I am, I can make it through anything in the one who makes me who I am. This is the word from God.
Thanks be to God. Thanks be to God. Yes. Yes, we begin today our four-week sermon series on happiness. We call this series Searching for Happiness. And there are a couple factors that influence me in my decision making of having this series. But maybe I can say this, as I will plan to say more about it next week. Yeah, Rhea, you are one of them. You influenced me in making decision to have this series. What I mean by that is actually I ran a survey with our families who gave us email addresses with the VBS registrations. And then I asked them, which sermon series would work for this month in your life better? Between the sermon series about the lessons from baseball for the life of a faith, and the second is searching for happiness, and this more votes were given to this searching for happiness, and one of them was from the Rhea. So then questions definitely we can begin with in this series on this first Sunday is this: where do we search for happiness? As a successful fundraiser, I might have to say this, at least this weekend. The answer is at our church Lodi Fair booth, right? Lodi food booth. So imagine, yeah, imagine fresh deep fried cheese curd in your mouth. Oh, that's a thing that makes you happy, right? But then, No, not exclusively this weekend, but in your everyday life, where do you search for happiness? What does your pursuit of happiness look like? What do you believe makes you happy? When, today John read the first scripture reading from the book of Ecclesiastes. Then when she did it, did you catch the three paths the writer of Ecclesiastes took in his quest for happy life? He said that those paths looked promising in the beginning, but in the end, they did not satisfy him. So that way he warns us not to follow his examples. So let me share the three paths that he took in his search for happiness. He said to himself, first, come now, I will make a test of a pleasure. Enjoy yourself. And that's what he did. As written in the following verses, he even cheered his body with wine and gathered with a chorus of singers to entertain him with song and music and even with more, concubines made of his body. Today, people still turn to pleasure to find happiness. Yeah, we know some pleasure like alcohol, abuse, drug abuse, gambling, adulterous affairs, destructive. Meanwhile, other pleasure like vacations and movies, concerts, sports can be fun and wholesome. Yeah, this weekend is a good example, right? At the Lodi Fair, we eat tasty fair food, ride a carnival ride, enjoy playing bingos, enjoy shows and exhibits. And I know many people cannot get away from the demolition derby. There is nothing wrong with this. Everybody needs to go to the fair sometimes, but we know that that's not sufficient. Though we all need such a diversion and fun, we know very well that pleasure by itself is not enough. Even if we will always have free access to pleasures, we know that's not enough. Imagine 365 days with a cheese curds in your mouth. No, that's not fun. That's not a happy thing. So imagine going on a vacation trip 365 days. Then you know what? You will miss your home terribly, right? Then you will not feel happy. The writer of Ecclesiastes says, I said to myself, let's go for it. Experiment with pleasure and have a good time. But there was nothing to it. Nothing but smoke. Hey, you may say, that sounds excessive. But it may be true when we put into consideration that happiness is not the same as a pleasure or a fun. Here, we know the happiness in our sermon, the series, it means life satisfactions and contentment. And it doesn't define by pleasure. The second path that he took was a path of possessions. He said, I also had great possessions of herds and flocks and more than any who had been before me in Jerusalem. I also gathered for myself silver and gold and treasures of king and of the provinces. Then what? He must be happy because he was rich, right? But he said of all his possessions, in these words, all was a vanity and a chasing after wind. Later in chapter 5, he adds, the lover of money will not be satisfied with money. Two Bible verses like this about money, you'd respond by saying, hey, I'm not a lover of money. But we soon realize that money has a power to take up our mind and heart. Then while our mind and heart are not under our control, how can we be happy? No way. Right? Please know that I'm not naive about money. We need money. We are economic creatures. Nobody can live a quality of life without having basic needs met. But once our basic needs are met, most stuff will not satisfy the deeper longing in our souls for meaning and life satisfactions. So the idea that more stuff buys happiness, life satisfaction, that's a lie. Pleasure and possessions didn't bring him life satisfaction. Then he looked to his career, his success, and his accomplishment. He said, I made great works. I became great and I surpassed all who were before me in Jerusalem. This day, people constantly try to find meaning and happiness through the accomplishment they can make with their careers. And if I'm honest, I am one of them. I needed to admit it. Then, what? The generations who are working vigorously or of high rank now must be the happiest. No. According to the 2017 Harris Poll Survey of American Happiness, which is summarized on time.com website, older people ages 65 plus who are retirees are the happiest. That's why I wanted to retire as soon as I can, right? No, it doesn't work that way. I mean, not retirement, but attitude. Perspective, that is what determines happiness, right? So in that, I would like to wrap up the first half of my sermon with a quote from Dr. Sonia Lyubomirsky, professor of psychology at the University of California, Riverside. Her research has been on a so-called positive psychology, which focuses on what people makes feel happy and satisfied, rather than focusing on pathologies, a study on things that make people unhappy and sick. So this to study on this subject and to prepare for this sermon series, I bought two of her books, and one of them is the best-selling book that he published, the title How of Happiness, and the other book is The Myths of Happiness. And she begins the book in these words, I quote, "Nearly all of us buy into what I call the myth of happiness, belief that certain adult achievement like marriage, kids, jobs, wealth will make us forever happy, and that certain adult failures or adversities like health problems, not having a life partner, having little money will make us forever unhappy." She called it the myth of happiness. Of course, as she says, it is not right to say that those achievements won't make us happy at all, because they almost certainly will, right? But through her decade-long research, she has found that the problem is that these achievements, even when initially satisfying, will not make us as intensively happy or for as long as we believe they will. The bottom line is this: psychological research has proved that circumstances do not significantly increase long-term contentment. Rather, how we respond to them does it. And then she argues that we all have an innate ability to be resilient, which she and her fellow psychologists call psychological immune system. We have that immune system to be resilient with adult failures that make us feel that we are going to be never happy. So then, Ray, her focus is how we can increase our ability to have a positive attitude. Right, the power of a positive attitude is what I am going to say more about for the next few minutes. But before we go any further, one important disclaimer needed to be made. While positive attitude can help depressed persons, this sermon is not about clinical depressions, right? If you think you may suffer, or if you know someone that you'd like to share this message as you feel that they might suffer from clinical depression, then probably the first advice ought to be asking them to see a doctor for a thorough evaluation. But please also know that I always wanted to be of help to you and to them in a way that I can, probably mostly with my listening presence and also the empathetic presence. Again, the power of a positive attitude. Then you feel that you don't need a sermon because you have learned it firsthand. But before we go further, let me introduce you a little boy who is very good at maintaining positive attitude. He always found a way to cultivate positive attitude and spirit. And then partially because, like me, he is a lover of baseball. Okay, he goes like this: "I am the greatest batter in the world." And one day he went to the backyard and he tossed the ball into the air and swung it. Strike one, because he missed it. Then undaunted, he yelled, "I am the greatest batter in the world." And he did it one more time, tossed the ball into the air and swung it and missed it. What? Strike two. Okay. "I am the greatest batter in the world." Then he did it again, only to make missing the ball. Strike three. Without missing a beat, he grinned from one ear to the other, shouted, "I am the greatest pitcher in the world." Is it kind of attitude that you live in? No, because positive attitudes needs our effort. The question is, how can we foster a positive attitude while we know very well about the power of a positive attitude? So I believe that we can do it better when we acknowledge that it requires practice and effort. Because contentment is an inside job to do, not determined exclusively by circumstances, but mostly powerfully influenced by our effort. Today, we read the Apostle Paul say, "Friends, I would say you will do best by filling your minds and meditating on things true, novel, reputable, authentic, compelling, gracious." That way, filling your mind and meditating on the best, not the worst, the beautiful, not the ugly, things to praise, not things to curse. This way, Paul encourages us to focus on the good and to choose a positive attitude. But consider that he was writing this letter while he was where? In prison, on a charge of spreading Christian faith and message. He was also suffering from a chronic physical ailment, which he called the thorn in the flesh. Considering his difficult circumstances, we can see that he must have worked hard to cultivate positive spirit. He encouraged us to do it as well. Again, cultivating positive attitude is an act of discipline. It takes effort and practice. Do you know Jessica Long, an American Paralympic swimmer? That you just saw her very briefly on the video from the screen. This 29-year-old Paralympic swimmer has won 27 medals at 5 Paralympics, including 15 gold medals. And one of the Toyota commercials featured her story, her family story. So let's take a look at this video.
Mrs. Long?
Yes?
We've found a baby girl for your adoption, but there are some things you need to know. She's in Siberia, and she was born with a rare condition. Her legs will need to be amputated. I know this is difficult to hear. Her life, it won't be easy.
It might not be easy, but it'll be amazing. I can't wait to meet her.
We believe there is hope and strength in all of us. Toyota, proud partner of Team USA.
It still gives me a goosebump when I see this video, the commercial. Life is not easy. We all know it. But life will be different to those who can say, it'll be amazing. Their lives are not exempt from all kinds of hardships or difficult circumstances. But like good athletes, they work hard to foster a positive spirit in the middle of hard circumstances to foster good spirit. And I believe that this becomes easier when we understand it not just to be the act of discipline, but also act of faith. Paul's ability to foster positive attitude grew out of faith. Let's read his words in the late Eugene Peterson's modern paraphrase here together, as we can find those words on the screen on the next slide. Let's read it together. Let's try it. I have found the recipe for being happy, whether full or hungry, hands full or hands empty. Whatever I have, wherever I am, I can make it through anything in the one who makes me who I am. He kept a positive attitude alive in his mind and heart because he knew and believed in the one who said to him over and over, constantly and consistently, I am with you. I know you. I will never leave you alone. To say more about this truth, the cultivating the positive attitude is an act of faith, I can share the three experiences that I had this week. First, as the back-to-school week began, I wanted to send an email to our Sunday school families and the families who came to our vacation Bible school. This way, I wanted to say back-to-school blessings to them. In the email, I include this week five simple statements that parents can read to their children in one statement a day. The statement reminds the kids of what is true about them, no matter what circumstances they will face. Toward the 20 daily statements of truth, this week starts with this. Day one, I am a child of God. Day two, I am created in God's image. And on day three, I am loved. And this will continue like this. I am made in God's grace, and I am known, and I am wonderfully made, and I am chosen, and I am God's masterpiece. Then it will end with these statements on the last 3 days. I am never alone. I am a light, and I am enough. Friends, what do you feel about yourself this day? If you give your eyes and hearts to the circumstances, then you may fail to define your happiness in the right place. What you do or what you fail to do cannot define our happiness. Let our happiness be determined with what cannot be taken away from us, with what is ever true about us, because it is claimed by God. Second experience that I had this week, speaking of this truth, is this. Yes, to be honest, I struggle in my preparation for this series because I was asking myself, am I happy enough to deserve preaching on happiness? Then sharing my honest struggle in a conversation with one of my dear church members, turned to one email from her. And in that email, she was sharing about her life stories. Then she said that even through all the ups and downs of life, happiness never left her as she gave her thoughts and attitudes to the understanding of how wonderful support system she had, and also to the conviction of a faith that God is in control in her life. To live that conviction and to live out that attitude, what she does is to repeat her life verse over and over and keep it close to her heart. It is Psalm 121, which begins in these words, I lift up my eyes to the hills, from where will my help come? My help comes from the Lord who made heaven and earth. He will not let your foot be moved. He who keeps you will not slumber. He who keeps you will neither slumber nor sleep. Faith is her secret of living life happy and contented. Contentment is an inside job requiring of our effort. But at the same time, cultivating a positive attitude and spirit is an act of a faith. Not a kind of self-help maxim saying, believe yourself. No, but building our confidence and optimism on what God says about us. Now, I'd like to finish this whole sermon by sharing the third experience that I had this week. I wrote one email to a family who lost their loved one to suicide. And I said this, I quote myself, what can be proclaimed always and everywhere, of course, even at a gathering of remembering someone who struggled in the darkness of their soul, even to the last moment of their life, is that we are always loved, even when we don't love ourselves. We are known both in life and death, even when people will forget us. This is who we are. Let's build our life on this knowledge and this truth. I hope and pray that knowing who God says you are, may you foster positive attitude and live a true, satisfying, happy, contented life. And I'd like to finish this whole sermon with Jessica Long's quote. The only disability in life is a negative attitude.